Today's program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, producing the country's best dry, cured, and aged hams, bacon, and sausage using 100% pasture-raised, certified humane Berkshire cuts. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we co-host this weekly adventure through all things fermented on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We're archived on iTunes and Stitcher and HeritageRadioNetwork.org, so if you would like to share this with your friends, or you missed it, but you're not missing it because you're listening to us right now. Hi, Mary. What's going on?
Well, first, we had our friends from Kevin and Basil from Finback on last week. So their beers are actually hitting the market next week. If you are in New York City, they will be doing three opening launch nights. The Owl Farm in Brooklyn on Wednesday, the 22nd. Jimmy's Number 43 on Thursday, the 23rd. And Forest Hills Station House on Tuesday, the 28th. So we'd like to welcome them to town. Definitely start looking out for their beers.
That's all January 2014, by the way.
Yes, correct.
Depends on how far ahead you're listening to this archive. Also, this year, it's New York Craft Beer Week, or New York City Beer Week, is February 21st to March 3rd. A lot of fun stuff is happening in particular, and I'm going to keep pumping this one because we're really, really excited to do it. We're going to have a giant party at Grand Central Terminal, quite iconically New York. All the people in the New York City Brewers Guild will be there, along with several of our great friends, and a lot of fun will be had.
And that's the official launch party on the Friday that launches Craft Beer Week, right?
Yeah, the 21st.
That'd be awesome. There's a lot of good events that are just starting. People are just starting to put out there, so definitely keep an eye open. There's, I think, tickets to some of these events will go really, really fast. So definitely, if you see something you want to do, get your ticket now.
Keep in touch at NYC Beer Week. Sign up for the mailing list and for all information about upcoming events. Speaking of upcoming events, and to all the homebrewers out there, we are hosting Homebrew Alley 8 now. It's our 8th year doing this. It's a national homebrew competition. A lot of really great judges, valuable feedback. Go to homebrewalley.com to register entries and to volunteer time if you'd like to come and help us steward and take that thing to the limits.
So, Chris.
What, Mary?
What is this wonderful array of foods in front of us?
Well, you had a birthday recently, and on that birthday, you found out in the morning, very last minute, that there was an event going on at the public library. There's a really awesome speaker speaking about kimchi. So in front of us, we have a bunch of kimchi, and we have our new friend, Tomi Lumuako.
Hello, everyone. Chris, Mary, glad to be here.
How you doing? Thanks for coming.
I'm doing good. So I have to say, we went to this lecture at the Mulberry Street Library in Manhattan, and you were absolutely amazing. Chris had made kimchi like a month before, I guess.
Only like 2 weeks before, actually.
A couple weeks. Wow. But we learned so much. Kimchi. And you really did an absolutely fantastic job covering so much. So let's talk kimchi.
All right.
Who are you?
Yeah. I am. I'm Tomi Lumuako. I'm actually a graphic designer from the publishing world. But I've taken a turn recently towards food. I'm part of the slow food movement, so they say. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because my later work has been more food related. Like I've done, as you noticed, the packaging for the Victory Brewing Company. Yeah. I am the Dirt Wolf guy.
Fantastic.
Bill got me a medium shirt there.
And the Golden Monkey guy.
I'm the Golden Monkey guy. It's very true. It's very true.
Dirt Wolf.
But I actually got into it sort of publishing related. Kimchi's one of my favorite foods. I can't eat any fermented fish thing anymore. I'm very allergic to it.
Really?
Yeah. So I sort of delved into kimchi because it's one of my favorite foods, but really tried to develop a kimchi that did not use any fermented fish product but still had the full flavor. So I really experimented a lot with different types of powdered mushrooms to get the chitin, that type of a protein, and different kelps and seaweed to get what you're tasting right here.
And that started from, I mean, why this? Well, it was What was the impetus besides just wanting to get the flavor?
Part of it was that it's one of my favorite things to cook. And back to the publishing is I am writing a cookbook, which is about cooking with kimchi. And there, it's some of it is traditional, but I try to bring it into, what do we actually eat? Meatloaf, burgers, dogs, potato salads, pulled pork, and those are the things that I've been focusing on with this type of a cookbook with kimchi.
Yeah, and so this is actually part one of two episodes. We'll talk more about what you do with kimchi in the next episode, but what is kimchi?
Kimchi, it is it's any type of Korean fermentation. Most people think it's the basic Napa cabbage that we all see. That's one type of kimchi, and although most kimchi is spicy and red, not all of it is. Kimchi is fermented Korean pickles.
Of all sorts.
Of all sorts. It's quite a variety.
And that was the one thing when I first started looking into kimchi, I bought the kimchi cookbook. And I was, because I've had, basic kimchi. Actually, I was introduced to Korean food very late in life, probably late 30s, I'm guessing, maybe mid, late 30s.
Oh, you got stuck in Queens?
No, I just was led a very sheltered culinary life until then, until I moved to New York City. But I didn't realize that there were so many. I mean, not only from fermentation time, but just the type of how you chop the cabbage, right?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, the what I have here is there's mak kimchi, which most people are familiar with. That's the chopped up salad style kimchi. Mak means convenient or casual. What I have here is pogi kimchi. Pogi means head. And usually it's a half head that's been salted and stuffed and fermented. I cut mine into quarters because it seems to be what the amount people want to eat. there's another type which is making it to the market more often. It's kakdugi, which is the fermented Korean radish. It is not daikon. It is actually a different radish which has more substance. It has more sugar content, and it holds up to fermentation quite well. It still has a crisp quality when salted and processed properly.
And these are big radishes. Like you put one of the pictures and you think had your glasses
the size
on
of a
it
football. Says a head.
Are they easy to find?
In New York, yes. I always think it's kind of funny how Korean food is popping up all over the place. H Mart is one of the bigger Korean grocery stores. And a friend of mine in Knoxville, he went to my blog and wanted to know how he could make it. And I said, why don't I send you a radish? He goes, no, I could get it at the H Mart. They're like, the H Mart in Knoxville?
Oh, yeah. We were just in one in Atlanta, actually.
It's bizarre.
And their kimchi bar is amazing. Holy cow.
Well, the one on Parsons Avenue in Flushing is quite amazing. They have, they have the whole hot bar, the kimchi bar, broken down into age, different types. I'm just amazed with what, it's not just kimchi, it's banchan, which are all the small little side dishes that accompany Korean meals. I always think it's one of my favorite ways to eat. There's something nice about a big meal than little bites of, something salty, fishy, sweet, something brothy. I think it's a very wonderful way to eat.
I agree. That's actually one, now I love Korean food, but that's one of my favorite things about eating at a Korean restaurant are all these little banchan that you get.
Little banchan.
Yeah. And there's, actually a pretty amazing variety in them.
Oh, quite.
And many of which are fermented and or, pickled in some way.
Some fresh, yeah.
Yeah, some fresh, but variety.
The mak is the most common and it's pretty fresh.
Right? It is. It's usually served fresher.
How long is fresh and how long is it typical?
I would say this. The kind of sweet cabbagey mak kimchi that you have at a restaurant, that's made there. It's only about 2-3 days old. So it still has that corn sweetness to it. There's kind of a barley sweetness to it. After that, it really starts taking on a sour quality. The kind of kimchi that I make actually is a fine-aged kimchi, which it's more pungent, more acrid, more savory. It has more components of flavor. But mostly it's something that, as we're going to get to in a second segment, it's something that lends itself to cooking much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is a basic – so kimchi obviously is fermented cabbage or fermented vegetables. What is the basic process of – or, kind of the basic fermentation process. It's a lacto-driven process.
Yes, it is. It's driven by lactic acid bacteria. I know people sell starters, but it's a little It's a little ridiculous. Lactobacillus bacteria is present in the air. It's present in our bodies. It's on our skin. It's very much a part of the environment. And a very important part of the process is salting, brining, salting. It not only breaks down vegetable matter to, you know, better take to all the spices, but it creates an environment that suits lactobacteria and not other bacteria. And once that lactoacid bacteria has colonized, it actually battles other pathogens. You know, it will actually consume botulism, according to the Journal of American Medical Association. Wow. It's proven that it will, in its enclosed environment, you know, go and consume pathogens. I think that's amazing.
And it also brings it down, the acidity level, to a spot where other pathogens don't survive as well. I mean, that's
correct.
One component of
that
it.
That is
as well.
Correct. And that's part of the aging process is once the salt environment's been set up and the vegetable matter has been processed, the lactic acid bacteria creates an acid environment. So that's quite a bit of a chemical transformation that you have there. And as you've seen with kimchi, it's if you've seen the old-fashioned pictures of giant fermentation tanks, that's called an ongi. And that is very particular to fermentation. It's sort of heart-shaped with a smaller bottom. That aids in fermentation. Actually, it keeps the bacteria circulating on a regular basis while it sits around for, in theory, 2 to 3 months in a traditional Korean winter.
Mm-hmm. And those containers were traditionally ceramic or
ceramic.
Some kind of pottery?
Yeah, ceramic. You know, and that's the thing I struggle with as I look at fermenting. Like I do mine pretty much in large glass containers, but that's not very practical.
Right, heavy to carry around.
Heavy, fragile. I haven't broken one yet. You know, but I always think, what would happen if I, you know, like, oops, right off the truck.
And the ones you're doing are strictly cylindrical, or are you using a heart shape?
Cylindrical. I'm actually working with somebody on Kickstarter to design a rectangular fermentation container for home use. I think it's very interesting. So it does have slightly curved interior, and that aids in the shape of fermentation.
And that would be made of?
A ceramic,
okay.
Yeah, and he's really looking into quite a few different glazes that lend themselves to fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
I know. So, all right, I also have a question. What's the difference deal with the chopping of the cabbage? Because there's different chops that people do, right? Different shapes or sizes?
There are. In the more traditional one, like let's say there's a white kimchi, which is not spicy. Even though it's chopped, they want it to look more like a rose, like a flower. So everything is sliced very evenly, then stuffed back into the bowl with its own brine. It makes a beautiful presentation, but at the table it should look like a flower. With basic mock kimchi, really is just getting it down to mouth-sized pieces. You know, it's a very practical way to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Mock kimchi is actually not something you would set down for your special guest. It's very family, very casual.
So kind of the everyday kimchi.
Everyday kimchi. It's very casual. It's something that you eat that's usually on the fresh side. The longer-term fermentation, there are whole types of radishes that are just fermented for like a year. And that takes on quite a different character completely.
You said you focus on the long term. What's the longest that you do?
And, you know, that's kind of funny. I date them and I look at them. The longest that I've ever had a kimchi in the fridge was 8 months. Because I forgot it was there. Mm-hmm. And not much character change from, I would say, 5 months. So it still had the crisp quality, probably due to the refrigerated, environment. It didn't get any more acid. The flavor didn't get any deeper. It seemed to stay like that. If you know any Koreans, they always say you do not waste a thing. You do not throw out kimchi. When it gets to that age, that's something you use for stews because it does tenderize meat. You know, it does have that hot and sour quality for dishes. It's quite nice. It's something that I grew up with. I know that it's available in Korea, but a lot of the old fermentations are dried and then powdered.
Uh-huh.
And that's something that I don't think I brought it to the lecture because I don't...
You didn't bring it. You showed it and talked about how
dried
kimchi.
And I'm trying to modify it. In what I do, I'm trying to bring it to, let's say, an American level of taste. You know, with what is traditionally used, it's really the waste not, want not culture. It's something you add to stews. It's something you add to thicken a stock. It's something to add that slightly sour, bitter flavor, which is a very Asian aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily an American aesthetic. So the kind of powder that I've come up with, I've modified quite a bit to be used as a dry rub. And I'm calling it Hanguk saffron. Hanguk is Korean for Korean. And it has a beautiful saffron color by the time I'm done processing it.
Very cool.
I love it. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Tony Lumwako on
How to Make Kimchi.
All right.
How to Make Kimchi.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today. The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, welcome back to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org.
We're in the studio with Tony Lumwako.
Lumwako.
That's me. Lumwako.
From Kimchilicious, and he is talking to us about all things kimchi. So we've been talking about the different styles and types of kimchi and kind of the basic fermentation process. So how do you make it at home?
For a home use, I mean, it's actually not complicated. There are ingredients that may be hard to find. One is Korean chili powder. It's mm-hmm. coarsely ground, not the fine ground one. You want Korean chili flake. There's no substitute. So that if you are at an Asian food seller, make sure that they sell a Korean flake from Korea. There's a brand from California that I think is okay, but as it ferments, it loses a lot of its pungency. Mm. It could be just the way it's grown, or maybe it's a different pepper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, H Mart would be a common place that is, you know, around many places.
If you go to the website and look at the map, it's Koreans of the future are here. Right? All it dots the whole United States, even up to Alaska. That's so bizarre.
Yeah, it has H Mart.
Yeah, imagine you get to an outpost in Alaska and it's like a shack with a Korean person.
Yeah.
Like what's up there?
And I know I was reading an article that recommended. It was a chef in town, and he recommended actually Kalushians.
Yes.
So that's where we got our red pepper.
I always say they're high dollar, but the quality is unmatchable.
Yeah.
They really, I love getting all their spices. The cardamom they sell there is really fragrant. You could make tea out of it. It's delicious.
Yeah. But if you're interested, you would definitely recommend, if people don't have a local source to buy it, for them to order the actual Korean chili.
I would say people split on a bag. It's a 5-pound mm-hmm. bag. It costs about anywhere from, depending on the quality, anywhere from $22 to $35.
And a little goes a long way.
A little goes a long way.
You'll have it for a long time.
Yeah. And by the way, when you do open it up, don't keep it out dry. Fold it back up in the bag and stick it in the freezer.
Okay. Uh-huh. That's good.
To keep it fresh.
Because it's never completely dry. That's the beauty of this. It's always leathery soft. It's never bone dry. So that means that moisture content may make it mold.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That is excellent to know. What else?
Well, we have the Trinity right here. We have Korean chili flake, coarsely ground, garlic, and ginger. That is the main component of this chili paste. And, well, this is what I do. Since my stuff is vegan, the meat component, the pseudo-meat component, is a combination of different powdered mushrooms, kelp, and seaweed. And the reason why is mushrooms have a type of protein called chitin, which is exactly the same protein that you find in shrimp shells and crab shells. Mm-hmm. So it's a type of collagen protein. Through the course of fermentation, it does take on a very seaworthy flavor. It's very it has a lot of umami quality to it, and I think that's important. If you don't use a protein, you basically have hot sauerkraut.
Right.
So the normal way, or the non...
Well, a traditional way is using, I would say, a really good brand of anchovy sauce. It's not just fish sauce. Koreans use a type of fish sauce that is made purely out of one fish, so it's an anchovy. Which actually, by the way, because friends of mine have experimented with different peppers, they say they're happy with Aleppo pepper.
Okay.
Which I think is okay. Mm-hmm. It's very similar.
A substitute for the Korean red pepper.
A substitute.
Yeah.
It's as close as you're going to get, but a lot of the chilies that are powdered and sold out there are actually a combination of peppers. So I don't think you're going to get what you think, and you don't know what the quality is. And as with fermentation, it takes on different qualities that you don't expect. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like working a clay oven, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. The glaze was white when I put it in. Now it's green.
Right. So take us through. If somebody those are the seasonings.
Those are
sorry.
The seasonings.
Mm-hmm. So if someone has never made kimchi before and they want to try, what is a basic recipe for them?
Okay, a basic recipe. We'll start with napa cabbage. And let's say we're doing mock kimchi, which is the daily casual style of kimchi. You start off with a smaller cabbage head. You don't use a large one. Don't go any bigger than 3 pounds. You cut it into quarters, and then you cut it up into bite sizes. Well, think of it this way. You want to get it in your mouth.
Right.
So cut it into a convenient size that fits in your mouth.
Chopsticks do not act as knives.
No, they don't. It's a horrible mistake. People always
You don't have to eat it with chopsticks.
So get a good sharp knife out. Don't cut yourself. And cut it up into square mouth size bites. Salt it to a 3-pound head of cabbage. You probably want to use a good sea salt. Important sea salt, not iodized salt. Iodine will turn any green black. So sea salt has also other flavor components like magnesium, which is different from a table salt or a rock salt.
Mm-hmm.
So you salt it, let's say, to 3 pounds of cabbage, a half cup of salt. You mix it up really well and let it sit for 45 minutes, an hour, no longer than an hour and a half, no longer than that. And you'll notice a lot of the liquid drains out. It's broken the cell wall. It's released a lot of liquid. You want to rinse that really well after an hour. So rinse it, let it drain again. And that's the first step in conditioning the cabbage, is breaking down the cell wall. Now, part two is the what do you paste it with? Like, what do you use for paste? And my basic paste is, you can go to my blog and look at the recipe. But it is dried Korean chili flake, sugar, salt, minced garlic, minced ginger, an apple, a grated onion, and, of course, the protein component that I'm talking about, which is powdered kelp, powdered mushroom, and powdered seaweed. Mm-hmm. So you mix it up with a little water and just the flavor as you like. Some people put miso in it, like a very old aged miso.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a very traditional Korean thing to do in different parts of Korea. It's a source of protein, but some people are, you know, have a soy allergy. So if you do make it, let them know that, you know, you have soy in there.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you have your paste mixed up, you want to add a little bit of rice porridge. That's optional. I don't always do that. It cuts down on the potential for the cabbage to be bitter.
Okay.
And, you know, old crucifers have a slight bitterness. Napa cabbage, Savoy cabbage, those are sweeter, but they still have a bitter component.
Right.
So you make a porridge of sweet rice, you know, so it's just sweet rice, water, a little sugar.
Now, is this a sweet rice flour?
Sweet rice flour.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a popular brand. It's Mochiko.
Okay.
You know, I've seen it in the grocery store, and it's a little white box, you know, hasn't mm-hmm. changed since World War II. So you mix the paste and the porridge together. Now, there are other things you want to throw in there for flavor. One is, julienne vegetables. I typically put in julienne Korean radish, carrots, and scallions. just really try to keep it simple, because the flavor, you know, you don't want to blurry the flavor. I think that's the important thing, is you want to taste what the bites are. So you take all of those and mix it together in a large tub. And you just really cover as much as you can. Wear gloves.
Make sure the paste gets everywhere.
That's right. Make sure it, you know, hit the ceiling. If you have a cat, get it on the cat. You want to get it everywhere. The phone rings. Pick it up with your chili-covered hands. So you let it all mix. You add more salt as you feel. Salt is an important part of this process. Mm-hmm.
So you wash the initial salt brine off.
Yes.
But then you're adding more in. Again, would you recommend sea salt?
Yes. Okay. I would always use sea salt. Rock salt has a different quality. You can use kosher salt, actually. That has, since it's from the old salt beds, it does have, old salt sea beds, it does have quite a bit of magnesium, and that's an important flavor component in sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the umami that people talk about. So you mix it all up, you put it in a container. Like if you have a tall mason jar, put it in there, and you want to pack it to the bottom. You know, you want to pack it so that some liquid comes back to the top.
Okay.
If there's not enough liquid, add a little brine. So with that, keep it out on the counter for, I don't know, a day, 2 days, depending on how tart you want it to get. There should be a slight tart to it.
Now, do you weigh down yours so that it keeps the cabbage under the water?
Well,
or the brine?
Actually, you can. I know people people really do put in, like, river rocks. And
right.
I actually just take a bean masher and smash it back down again when it gets to the top.
Okay, that's good to know.
And I would say after... Your bigger concern of fermentation is at room temperature. That's when most of it actively goes bubbly. I know people that let it go for a week, and it's almost carbonated. That's a little strange and maybe too much for most people. But you do want some. You want to see the gas develop and come to the surface at room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Then you plunge it down and try to get most of the liquid to cover it, at least a half inch of liquid, at least. Stick it in the fridge. It's up to you. It could be there for... 2 days, it could be there a week. You want to really let it go? How ethnic do you want to go? It can go like 3 months.
Okay. In
the refrigerator.
In the refrigerator.
After the initial fermentation at room temperature being anywhere from 2 to 5, or
that's,
1 to 5.
That's actually
days,
correct. This is a two-step fermentation process. The first one is to colonize the bacteria and get it active, and you develop all the high notes in that first round.
When it's at room temperature.
At room temperature. Really has a, you know... It's the sugars are still in there. The sugars from the cabbage, the sugar that you're adding into the paste. So it has all the high notes. The basier deep notes, especially since I'm using kelp, develop in a longer-term refrigeration. So we have two different types of fermentation. A quick room temperature for colonization, and then a longer refrigerated fermentation that develops deeper flavors.
Mm-hmm. And... the most important time to have it underneath water or underneath the brine is during that initial fermentation in room temperature.
I would say it's actually the whole process. It's the whole process. You know what I do is I actually I learned this from my neighbors growing up on Guam. We have a huge Korean population. You save the outer leaves of the cabbage. You salt them as well as everything else so they get nice and leathery, as you see in this one here. We have a crisp one, and we have a nicely... rubbery, flexible cabbage slice here.
Mm-hmm.
Like you take the outer leaf, you form a cap, and that's what you use. And
for the top layer.
For the top layer. And I find that actually helps.
So my concern, I keep asking Mary this, so I only made kimchi once, and I, you know, started eating it, and it's in a little mason jar like that, and I put the lid back on, but there's no brine covering the top anymore. What's happening?
It's at fridge temperature, though.
It is.
Well, that's why I'm asking.
It's actually fine. Now, you've as long as it's sour.
Yeah. I mean, it's where I want it, but is oxidation a concern at this?
I think it ruins the flavor. I think you do want to keep it submerged. It's not going to affect the colony. I've never seen it mold over. People, you know, this is really funny. I my grandmother was always so about any fermented food, like, you scrape the top off, you know. But that's actually true. You know, in the waste not, want not culture, you just... peel the top stuff off.
Right, and eat what's underneath.
Same thing with sauerkraut. You know, you know anyone from Pennsylvania whose parents are Dutchy? You know, they'll tell you, like, don't waste it. You just pull the top off the thing.
Yep, absolutely. I'm a firm believer of that.
I'm into it. I get nervous about it.
If you're nervous, add a little bit of brine to it. But the thing is, you know, I'm always.
You think salinity will? Well, yeah, salinity.
The salinity will. You know, it'll all catch up. But I keep thinking, then you're adding more salt into it. Do you want more salt in your flavor?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it's cool because kimchi, because it develops these different flavors over time, from, you know, something that's sitting on your counter for 2 days to 5 days in on the counter, and then, you know, a week into the fridge to 3 months in the fridge. All, you know, if you compared those four stages of kimchi, they would all taste quite different.
Oh, they do. They're completely different.
And I think if somebody is new to kimchi or they're just starting to explore kimchi, it's worth making a batch and kind of keeping some around in the back of your fridge so that you can really get to know kimchi and learn what you what you really like.
I think it is. I always think of it this way. It's like, I'm not much of a baker. I make good biscuits. You know how many biscuits I had to ruin to get a good batch of biscuits? I felt like I wasted a whole cow of butter, you know? I'm like, this is dry.
And speaking of biscuits, we are at the end of our show today, but tune in and Tony will be back in a couple of weeks. I believe the first week of February, maybe?
Something like that. Yes, should be around then.
We're going to actually have a show for you with him and all about baking. We're going to do troubleshooting kimchi and then baking with kimchi. So tune in a couple weeks and Tony will be back.
Tony, thank you. Check out kimchilicious.com.
It's KIMCHEELICIOUS.
That's two E's for excellent, excellent.
I love it.
For Man About It over here.
Oh, thanks a lot,
for
you
joining
too.
Us.
Yeah,
thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.